everybody. And thank y'all again so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, settling in for a little cryptid fun, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios in a beautiful, almost end of the year episode that we're going to be talking about today with Montana and some of the cryptids and monsters up there, right? Some of the crazy stories.
Man, that place is beautiful.
It is beautiful, but the darn show like Yellowstone is ruining it because now these people moving up there in droves because I think they want to be cowboys, but it's like, no. No, don't ruin it. Like, just to make the whole place a national park, right?
It always sounds fun to be a cowboy till you're out there in the wee hours of the morning busting water troughs to make sure they got feed, right? Or you're checking on calves and it's snowing. Look, bro, the older I get, the more I'm like, nah, I think I'll stay inside.
Well, you're not wrong. The whole cowboy thing is romanticized, right? And on movies and on TV, they make it look really cool, but not actually.
I mean, it is really cool, but.
Well, yeah, but it's a lot of hard work, man. Yeah. I mean, a lot.
Yeah.
We're lucky to live in an area that's inundated with cowboys here in Parker County. We're the cutting horse capital of the world. And so that's all that's around here is horse ranches, cutting horse ranches, and more cutting horse
farms
ranches.
And ranches everywhere you look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trucks. Everybody, there's more trucks than cars here.
Oh, for sure. Cowboy Cadillacs. That's what they call them, right?
100%.
And most people, unless you're just new to the state, because we have an influx of a lot of new people around here. Most people who are from here, like us, have all done a little bit of ranching or work on farms, you know.
I mean, all that there was to do, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you're 15, 14, 13, I mean, you can get a job hauling hay every summer. No problem.
Oh, yeah.
And we did that lots of times.
100%.
And for all that don't know, there's different types of hay. So it depends. If you're hauling alfalfa, that's way different than like peanut or like Sudan or something. Some of that stuff is hard. The worst part is not the putting it on the trailer. It's the taking it off the trailer and putting it up in the barn. When it's already 100 outside, it might be 140 in the top of that
barn. And you can see the dust and you're just walking around in a cloud of dust and hay. Oh, yeah.
Doesn't help your allergies.
No.
One.
Sounds like I've been doing it now just simply because of all the winds is blowing up, man. It's killing me, but the weather is getting amazing now.
Yeah, man. I've been getting into the Christmas spirit. Me and my wife, we went to see the Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
How was it?
It was really good. Okay, so I bought it because, you know, my wife's into that stuff. I'm not into it. Sometimes you got to do things just for your special lady.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep them happy. I took her and her mother about 5-6 years ago at the American Airlines Center in Dallas. But back then, I didn't know nothing. I bought, you know, like $60 seats. Well, they were terrible. Well, this time, I knew different. So there's a new arena, Dickey's Arena in Fort Worth.
Was that where it was at?
Yeah. So
I've only been there. Good there, too.
Every seat in that place is good.
Yeah.
But I bought us floor seats, like 9th row. So I spent a little more money. But, man, I went into it. Just like I did with the Winchester House in San Jose, I was like, this is something I'm doing for her. It's going to be 2 hours.
Turned out awesome.
I actually had a really good time.
That's cool.
It was actually really cool. Got up the next day. I felt inspired. I hung the Christmas lights outside of the house.
I thought you were talking about you were actually going to like attempt to play an instrument.
I wished I could. If I could, I'd play the guitar. I always think that's an underrated.
Dude, that is underrated. Definitely.
Also, saxophone. Every song with a saxophone in it is instantly better.
Yeah, if you don't like the lost voice saxophone, like the whole clip of that part, I still believe.
I still believe. Yeah.
I play the triangle and the shaken egg with the shotgun pellets in it. The bird shot and the plastic egg, that's what I play.
Yeah, so I had a good time doing that. What I did not have a good time is with automobiles this week. This last week was rough on Kyle.
So, what happened?
Well, first off, I was driving down the road in my truck and I heard this strange sound and I was like, what's going on? And it's not an old pickup at all. I think I bought it last September
and I was like,
I didn't really feel like I had that much power. So I got pulled over, took a look. Well,
your turbocharger blew off.
One of the hoses cracked. It had a split in it.
Yeah.
So not that big a deal. Yeah. I took it down there and put it in the shop. So now we're down to two cars and they called me and there were some radiator problems. Ended up costing, you know, about $600. No big deal. Well, a couple months ago, my wife totaled our Expedition.
Yeah.
I bought her a new Tahoe. I've only made 3 payments on it.
She comes in Tuesday
morning and says, I wrecked the Tahoe.
I know.
I go, are you kidding me? She's like, no, I'm not joking.
I haven't seen your wife in a few days. Should I be concerned?
Well, you know where we always dump the deer carcasses?
Yeah. Don't go look there.
No, it wasn't that bad. It was just like, it just dented the front quarter panel.
Yeah, okay.
And then like Wednesday, my check engine light on my truck comes on again. So it's like one of those things. Like, I don't know why they didn't check everything before they let it go.
One thing led to another.
So now there's something wrong with the DEF system. So I don't even know. So it's in a shop. So we're down to one vehicle. Well, I can't work and her run all the kids around, so I'm in a rental car. I'm in an Enterprise car today.
Man. First world problem. Yeah.
And then I got a speeding ticket in Boyd.
What?
I haven't had a speeding ticket in 12 years.
I'm like, how long has it been?
Long time. The cop goes, well, do you know you're speeding? I was like, no, man, it's a new car. I've never driven it till today. It's like, you got me. You caught me.
You got you on.
So it was just a rough week. But this is, I'm still in the Christmas spirit, right? Hey, things happen.
Look, it can only, you're looking up from here.
That's right.
Right. You can only look up, start a new week.
Start a new year soon.
Start a new year.
2 or 3 weeks from starting a new year.
Yeah, see, perfect.
So don't worry about me.
I wasn't.
I'm feeling good. I know you are. I know you are. Things happen, right?
And we'll shake it off, right? We always do.
It could be worse. Speaking of worse, what if you accidentally saw a flying dragon or a pterosaur?
I'm down. Says, wait, accidentally? Yeah, I don't want to find one on purpose. I'm not looking for them.
It says, on about September 3rd, 2008, on a clear, sunny day around 11 a.m., I was driving north on Highway 680 between Fremont and Pleasanton, California. Just at the Highway 84 off-ramp, I looked up when something large caught my eye. And what I saw was a small pterosaur flying about 30 feet above my car. Talk about driver distraction. It flew directly over me, perpendicular to my direction, heading east toward Livermore. The reason I can estimate its distance from me is that it appeared to be about 10 feet above the top of the traffic cam located at Highway 680 and the 84 junction, which I was approaching at that particular moment. The creature looked very similar to paintings of the Ropin of Indonesia or Papua New Guinea. I would estimate it had about a 3 to 5 foot wingspan. It was light tan, all leathery skin, and the most astonishing thing was that it had no feathers. I could see the wrinkles and texture of its skin moving over its bones as it flew. The eyes were large, round eyes, and it appeared to be young, or at least that's the impression because of its size and some of its features, like the tail and the bump on the back of its head, were not as developed as those depicted of adult ropin or pterosaurs. I thought it probably flew at night because of the size of its eyes, which were perfectly round and huge. Much, much larger than an owl's, for example. The eyes probably took up about 40% of the cranial facial area. As my rational mind was striving to take all this in, I wondered why it was flying during the daylight hours, though it did not seem to be alarmed by anything. The wings were triangular, slightly rounded at the tips, but I did not see any hands attached to the wings, as these creatures are sometimes portrayed. The back of its triangle-shaped head came to a rounded point, jutting out a few inches. Its tail was not much more than a pointed stump. It had a fairly broad, triangular-shaped beak that was longer than the bump at the back of its head, perhaps 10 to 12 inches. Again, I was surprised at the breadth of its beak because it differed from drawings that I've seen in books. But this, I can assure you, was no pelican. It was no bat or anything else I'd ever seen flying through the sky, and it had no feathers. As it flew, its clawed feet hung down slightly from its body, positioned more towards the middle of its underside. Its large claws were slightly curled and faced backwards. I thought it looked a bit clumsy as it flew. It's that its feet and legs were not tucked up tight against the body during the flight, like birds. They were just dangling down. I can recall there were 3 visible toes. I was so shocked, but I also felt an excitement and wanted to pull over to watch it. But alas, I had to force myself to take my eyes off of it and mind my driving. It would have been a dangerous place to stop on that busy freeway, let alone to get out of the car. And by the time I could have pulled over, the hills would have probably blocked the view in the direction it was flying. And of course, it'd be far away by then. I witnessed this creature for 7 to 8 seconds before I had to tear my gaze away. But that was enough time to absolutely know what I was looking at. Something very, very strange. Something I had only seen in books about dinosaurs. I have a keen interest and curiosity about nature and the nature of really and reality, cryptozoology, metaphysics, and spirituality. Some would consider me a good observer. This experience felt like a privilege to have been a witness to a secret aspect of our natural world. Perhaps I somehow briefly interfaced with another dimension, but it was as real and third-dimensional as any other creature. I told a couple of my family members about it, and most of them do not believe me. But I know what I saw. It's exciting and validating to hear other sightings of similar creatures that are emerging in many locations. Thanks for all you do, Kay. Wow, Kay. Very, very strange.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, though, I'm not saying that that's what this was. I have seen small drones that look like pterosaurs. Or people build them and it looks like an RC plane kit, but the body looks like a pterosaur. And with the propellers spinning, you may not even notice it. And since he's on a busy freeway, could it be some guy flying it over the freeway to like mess with people?
And you couldn't hear it. You know what I mean? Because you're driving or you hear all this, you know, the extra car noise.
I mean, because she said it was very close. I mean, like 30 feet above her. So that's close enough to you could tell that.
Yeah.
Or I would think you could tell that this is a living creature. And,
oh, yeah.
And what else would it be?
Yeah.
But then again, how could there be a dinosaur?
I also like the idea that if they are still out there or if we get these flaps, I like the idea of them hunting at night, which makes them harder to see, right?
Well, right. That's amazing.
They only come out at night.
It does make sense. Lots of predators, especially like owls and things, they prefer to hunt at night. But not all owls. Some owls are daytime predators.
I got one here now that you were talking about your automobile issues.
Mishaps.
I want to read this one to you right here. It says, I was driving home through the mountains from a concert on July 11th of 2014 on Route 8 in Hamilton County, New York. It was 12:37 a.m., and I hit a creature that was carrying a deer with my car. My car was damaged from the hood to the rear by this creature, and I know it was at least injured, and its DNA may have been on my car. The speed limit was 55, and I was not able to stop in time when I saw this creature, who was carrying the deer, about to step into the road. I hit the brakes, but was only able to slow down before impact. I did not really believe in Bigfoot before that night, and I'm still shaken up and have not been able to share this story with anyone. I wanted to stop and see if the creature was okay, but I was scared out of my wits to stop and get out of the car. This creature was huge, at least 7.5 feet tall. Now, I've seen drawings and such of Bigfoot, and this creature looked similar, but had white around its hairline, and its fur was dark brown, almost black. I'm shaking writing this, and I'm in such disbelief that this happened to me. I didn't even report the accident to the police. I didn't know what to tell my insurance company. My car was totaled. The creature crushed my windshield wipers together, broke many pieces off the passenger side, and left smears of dirt and blood all over the rear window.
Wow.
So, how would you report that to your insurance company? Did you hit a deer, or did you hit a Bigfoot and a deer? Or just a Bigfoot?
I would just say the deer because I want my car repaired, not the drop me instantly and not help me out.
Right? You know how I mean? Would you even go about? Yeah, that's. But the idea of that really. Oh, you talk about overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
Like what would you do? You get out at this moment. And you're like, what am I supposed to say? Like nobody's going to believe.
No,
this.
No one's going to believe you. Don't mention if you hit a Bigfoot. Don't say it's a Bigfoot. Say it was a deer.
Don't say anything. Say I've hit something. Something. Let them make assumptions. It's way easier to let people assume than it is for you to give them the point, right? Just be like, hey, look, I ran over something that left blood and broken glass. Can somebody help me?
Yeah, because then they're going to be like, well, did this guy hit like a hitchhiker
exactly.
or something? You
can
get like incriminated on something you didn't even have anything to do with.
That's exactly my point. Now, let's also not forget that it was Montana that the man wearing the ghillie suit was killed by those girls in when he ran out in the road trying to freak people out with the whole Bigfoot stuff.
That's right. Yeah.
They got smoked. That was where this happened. So let's not do that. Folks, let's take a break. When I get back, we're going to be discussing some crazy stuff, really creepy sightings that took place in Montana. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. With a little bit of, I guess, strange and unusual Montana, I guess was what we could call it. Anyway, I'm going to be looking at a lot of stuff in Montana today because it is one of those states, sadly, I've not got to visit. And in fact, I may need to change that within the next year or so going up Montana and Wyoming, just they're beautiful. Like that area right in there is just beautiful. But I guess it's one of those things. It come from Roosevelt, right? And you may remember, those that have been listening for a while, I had talked about this. Oof, I don't even remember how long ago. It's probably been 6 years ago, maybe. Maybe not quite that long, when I had spoke about a fella named Bauman, and I was telling a story about Theodore Roosevelt, and I've talked about it, of how it seems like he kind of knew more about it from this Bauman story. Roosevelt wrote about this in a book. He had this book published back in 1893. It was called The Wilderness Hunter, and he relays this story. And don't forget, he went along with Muir whenever they went in looking at Yellowstone, which might as well, you know, be a whole refuge of Bigfoot stuff, the way it is, of stuff that's seen around in there. But I'm going to read you this story that that Roosevelt had actually had heard and reported on, just the way he put it out, to kind of get this whole thing kicked off. I think you're going to enjoy it for those that haven't heard it before. It's a really interesting thing to think about one of our presidents writing. This is how it come across. It says, "I once listened to a goblin story which rather impressed me. It was told by a grizzled, weather-beaten old mountain hunter named Bauman, who was born and had passed all his life on the frontier. Now, he must have believed what he said, for he could hardly repress a shudder at certain points of the tale. But he was of German ancestry, and in childhood had doubtless been saturated with all kinds of ghost and goblin lore, so that many fearsome superstitions were latent in his mind. Besides, he knew well the stories told by the Indian medicine men in the winter camps, of the snow walkers and the specters and the formless evil beings that haunt the forest depths, and dog and waylay the lonely wanderer who after nightfall passes through the regions where they lurk. And it may be that when overcome by the horror of the fate that befell his friend, and when oppressed by the awful dread of the unknown, he grew to attribute both at the time and still more in remembrance weird and elfin traits to what was merely some abnormally wicked and cunning beast. But whether this was so or not, no man can say. When the event occurred, Bauman was still a young man and was trapping with a partner among the mountains dividing the forks of Salmon from the head of the Wisdom River. Not having much luck, he and his partner determined to go up into a particularly wild and lonely pass through which ran a small stream said to contain many beaver. The pass had an evil reputation because the year before, a solitary hunter who had wandered into it was there slain, seemingly by a wild beast, the half-eaten remains being afterwards found by some mining prospectors who had passed his camp only the night before. The memory of this event, however, weighed very lightly with the two trappers, who were as adventurous and hardy as the others of their kind. They took their two lean mountain ponies to the foot of the pass, where they left them in an open beaver meadow, the rocky timber-clad ground being from there onward impractically unpassable for horses. Then they struck out on foot through the vast gloomy forest, and in about 4 hours reached a little open glade where they concluded to camp, as signs of game there were plentiful. There was still an hour of daylight left, and after building a brush lean-to and throwing down and opening their packs, they started upstream. The country was very dense and hard to travel through, and there was much down timber, although here and there the somber woodland was broken by small glades of mountain grass. At dusk, they again reached camp. The glade in which it was pitched was not many yards wide, the tall, close-set pines and firs rising round it like a wall. On one side was a little stream, beyond which rose the steep mountain slope, covered with the unbroken growth of evergreen forest. They were surprised to find that during their absence, something, apparently a bear, had visited camp and had rummaged about among their things, scattering the contents of their packs and, in sheer wantonness, destroying their lean-to. The footprints of the beast were quite plain, but at first they paid no particular heed to them, busying themselves with rebuilding the lean-to, laying out their beds and stores, and lighting the fire. While Bauman was making ready supper, it being already dark, his companion began to examine the tracks more closely and soon took a brand from the fire to follow them up, where the intruder had walked along a game trail after leaving the camp. When the brand flickered out, he returned and took another, repeating his inspection of the footprints very closely. Coming back to the fire, he stood by it a minute or two, peering out into the darkness, and suddenly remarked, "Bauman, that bear's been walking on two legs." Bauman laughed at this, but his partner insisted that he was right, and upon again examining the tracks with a torch, they certainly did seem to be made by but two paws or feet. However, it was too dark to make sure, and after discussing whether the footprints could possibly be those of a human being and coming to the conclusion that they could not be, the two men rolled up their blankets and went to sleep under the lean-to. At midnight, Bauman was awakened by some noise and sat up in his blankets. As he did so, his nostrils were struck by a strong, wild beast odor, and he caught the loom of a great body in the darkness at the mouth of the lean-to. Now, grasping his rifle, he fired at the vague, threatening shadow, but must have missed, for immediately afterwards he heard the smashing of the underwood as this thing, whatever it was, rushed off into the impenetrable blackness of the forest and the night. After this, the two men slept but little, sitting up by the rekindled fire, but they heard nothing more, and in the morning, they started out to look at the few traps that they had set the previous evening and to put out some new ones. But an unspoken agreement they kept together all day and returned to camp towards evening. On nearing it, they saw, hardly to their astonishment, that the lean-to had again been torn down. The visitor of the preceding day had returned and in wanton malice had tossed about their camp kit and bedding and destroyed the shanty. The ground was marked up by its tracks, and on leaving the camp, it had gone along the soft earth by the brook. The footprints were as plain as if it was on snow, and after a careful scrutiny of the trail, it certainly did seem as if, whatever the thing was, it had walked off on but two legs. Now the men, though thoroughly uneasy, gathered a great heap of dead logs and kept up a roaring fire throughout the night, one or the other sitting on guard most of the time. About midnight, the thing came down through the forest opposite across the brook and stayed there on the hillside for nearly an hour. They could hear the branches crackle as it moved about, and several times it uttered a harsh, grating, long-drawn moan, a peculiar, sinister sound. Yet it did not venture near the fire. Now, in the morning, the two trappers, after discussing the strange events of the last 36 hours, decided that they would shoulder their packs and leave the valley that afternoon. They were more than ready to do this because, in spite of seeing a good deal of game sign, they had caught very little fur. However, it was necessary first to go along the line of their traps and gather them all, and this they started out to do. All the morning, they kept together, picking up trap after trap, and each one was empty. Now, on first leaving camp, they had a disagreeable sensation of being followed. In the dense spruce thickets, they occasionally heard a branch snap after they had passed, and now and then there was a slight rustling noise among the small pines to one side of them. At noon, they were back within a couple of miles of camp. In the high, bright sunlight, their fears seemed absurd to the two armed men, accustomed as they were, through long years of lonely wandering in the wilderness, to face every kind of danger from man, brute, or element. There were still three beaver traps to collect from a little pond in a wide ravine nearby, and Bauman volunteered to gather these and bring them in, while his companion went ahead to camp and made ready the packs. On reaching the pond, Bauman found three beaver in the traps, one of which had been pulled loose and carried into a beaver house. Now, he took several hours in securing and preparing the beaver, and when he started homewards, he marked, with some uneasiness, how low the sun was getting. And as he hurried toward camp under the tall trees, the silence and desolation of the forest weighed on him. His feet made no sound on the pine needles, and the slanting sun rays striking through among the straight trunks made a gray twilight in which objects at the distance glimmered indistinctly. There was nothing to break the gloomy stillness which, when there is no breeze, always broods over these somber primeval forests. At last he came to the edge of the little glade where the camp lay and shouted as he approached it, but got no answer. The campfire had gone out, though the thin blue smoke was still curling upwards. Near it lay the packs wrapped and arranged. At first, Bauman could see nobody, nor did he receive an answer to his call. Stepping forward, he again shouted, and, as he did so, his eyes fell on the body of his friend, stretched beside the trunk of a great fallen spruce. Rushing forward, it's the horrified trapper found that the body was still warm, but that the neck was broken, and there were four great fang marks in its throat. The footprints of the unknown beast creature was printed deep into the soft soil, and that told the whole story. The unfortunate man, having finished his packing, had sat down on the spruce log with his face to the fire and his back to the dense woods to wait for his companion. While thus waiting, his monstrous assailant, which must have been lurking in the woods, waiting for a chance to catch one of the adventurers unprepared, came slightly up from behind, walking with those long, noiseless steps and seemingly still on two legs. Evidently unheard, it reached the man and broke his neck by wrenching his head back with its forepaws while it buried its teeth in his throat. It had not eaten the body, but apparently had romped and gamboiled it around in uncouth, ferocious glee, occasionally rolling over and over on it, and had then fled back into the soundless depths of the woods. Bauman, utterly unnerved and believing that the creature with which he had to deal with was something either half human or half devil, some great goblin beast, abandoned everything but his rifle and struck off at speed down the pass, not halting until he reached the beaver meadows where the hobbled ponies were still grazing. Mounting, he rode onwards through the night until beyond reach of pursuit. And that's how it ends. That's how it goes, is that he rode back out and then, of course, ends up telling this story to Mr. Roosevelt. So that is, without a doubt, an extremely unnerving and unsettling tale of something that might have gone on there, right? The idea of a killer Bigfoot being out there, of course, you know, endless movies, that's the way we like to make it. Oh, goodness. But it would be very unsettling, especially back then. Imagine all the way back in the late 1800s. Anything like that goes down. You could basically tell any story you wanted if you had caused a crime, committed murder, anything. Like, it's your word against theirs. So when you see stories, or when I see stories like this, it's one of those things, especially as they've been passed down. I'm sure there's been elaboration. There isn't every story, right? You can tell the same story that your family knows, and you could change up just a little bit of it. And over time, people will go with it. And the next thing you know, things have grown and it's gotten bigger and crazier. We've all seen it happen. I'm sure this happened here as well to some extent. But the idea still of something like that attacking and killing and being in the woods in the dark, like I would have ran too. I think it's easily, we could all agree, we all would have taken off, right? Like, we got to get out of here. There's no more hanging out. You can't just be kicking it around. But what's funny about the great state of Montana is the endless sightings. There are a pile of Bigfoot sightings, and it makes sense, right? All up in this area in the Bitterroot Mountains, that whole, it's beautiful in there. But it makes sense. Now, of course, Bigfoot would have to have a real thick hair coat to hang out up there because it gets cold, super cold. But let's rewind a little bit to the Salish, the natives there, right? The Salish tribes, which are known as the Flatheads. They have stories of giants. They tell some really interesting stories in their history. I've talked about it on a little bit, brushed up against it. I believe I even talked about it some in Alaska, maybe too, of some of this. But they talk about, I can never pronounce this. Y'all know this. Y'all know how this is going to go. It's like Natalaguskin, Natalagutin, some big word for a big creature. What they called the giants, that was the name for their giants. They said these large, powerful beings is basically how they described them. They even told these stories to Lewis and Clark on the expedition. The whole expedition thing, there was always talk about this. One of their traditional stories, which is, it's odd to even have this as a traditional folklore, but I love it nonetheless. Listen to this. It says, once when a small hunting party came upon a giant asleep in the forest, they tied him up with ropes of buffalo hair and then set upon his chest and beat him until he awakened. Then he laughed thunderously, burst the ropes, and sent the men flying through the air as he rose to his feet. Seizing one of them by the ankle, he tossed the man across the Missoula River. So, is this a Sasquatch? Right? Are we talking about them jumping on Bigfoot? Or are we talking about real encounters with giants, much like endless of the Native American stories talk about in the past, of dealing with tribes of giants all on this continent? Of course, you know where we stand. We like to believe it's real giants, right? Like, I think that's what it is. They have a lot of stories in their history of that. There's several of the tribes from that area that tell the same stories of dealing with these giants who were greatly feared by the tribes because they fed on people. They preyed on the humans. And now this is an ongoing story we hear all across North America, the fact of these cannibalistic giants, right? I don't even know what to say. More of it, it's so much the idea. I would love to see a movie made or just any kind of something made where you could see like they would have the tribes of giants in this. I think that would be amazing. But it's not just that. The Sioux Nation up there also, on the eastern side of Montana where the Sioux Nation is, they have stories of it. Here's a story from a full-blooded Yankton Sioux and a Montana native back in 1977 named Marino First spoke with the Great Falls Tribune about a thing, all right, about this Sioux tale of these creatures and this traditional lore. So what he had to say, our tribe traveled in what now would be the area from Black Hills through western South Dakota, North Dakota, and into Montana and Saskatchewan. So there's a first accounts of a story of a group of hunters who found a place that they called a place of many caves. And two of the men, one was an older fella, one was a person in their early 20s, went into these caves to see what was inside. That's what they go looking for, okay? They go in there looking around. This is what it says. After some time, they came to a place where the glow seemed stronger, creating a lighted hallway, and they noticed the passageway turned at an angle in the light. A strong odor came to their nostrils. Rounding the bend, they came upon a large, hairy creature sleeping against one wall. As they stopped and stared at the strange sight, the creature raised its head, blinked open its eyes, and stared back. The men turned and ran. Run out of the cave, climb down, get out. Says the two men when found were in a state of shock, all right, by their companions waiting there. Their knees, elbows, and shoulders were cut and bleeding from falling down and crashing against the walls as they ran out. So they go back to the camp. They get questioned. That's the story they say. You're not going to believe what is in there. Yeah. How wild is it? And these are just more one after another, where they see these Bigfoot actually just asleep. Like you're just walking up on them. So now I think back to the story from the Flathead, the Salish natives, talking about finding the sleeping giants. So they're walking. So apparently Bigfoot, if y'all didn't know, is a sound sleeper. So make that a thing, too. If you're going to sneak up on the Bigfoot, you're going to want to make sure you catch him snoozing. Or you bring plenty of Jack links, like we've talked about in the past. You do not want to come across Bigfoot without some good jerky. He's going to be upset. But, like I said, there are several stories of people catching these things, older stories, like, you know, of them catching them asleep in these caves. Now, we've discussed it, too. The caves would be that's the spot to go, right? That's the spot to move directly into. If you're going to be up there looking around, this is where we have to go. We have to go into the caves. We have to look around down. And well, I say we, somebody else does. I'm not going in the caves. I'm terrified. Now, here's an interesting story. Yeah, I'm terrified. I'm not going in the caves, but let's say I got to drop this interesting story. This took place in October of 1952. I love it because there's, you know, we love to hunt outdoors, this whole thing, Montana, that's this whole deal. So in 1952, a person named Lyle Slade was on an elk hunt up there in Missoula County, near there at Seeley Lake. And Lyle spotted what he said looks like a wounded elk in this clearing. He's like, whoop. So it catches the movement, sees this elk, and at the same time, he hears this strange sound. And he described this sound as a jabbering noise. So I'm not sure what it is. A lot of jabbering, right? At this moment, as he hears this noise looking up there at the elk, he hears it close to this whole area, describes a 7-foot-tall creature, comes out, crosses the clearing, headed for this elk. This thing was covered in cinnamon-colored hair. If you haven't seen it, you can look up cinnamon phase bear. They're beautiful. Cinnamon-colored hair. And if that wasn't crazy enough, right? Now, this is the part that I really enjoy. Slade reports that whatever this thing was, this creature was wearing, and I guess you maybe saw it shine, I don't know, but reported seeing this thing wearing a belt and belt buckle. Yeah. I like to picture the fact that a Bigfoot has been out there in the mountains of Montana, and he finds maybe something left by, I like to believe, maybe the hunters, maybe he, you know, whatever it is. I don't want to think about him. Maybe he attacked somebody and took them for their belt buckle. I don't know, right? But I like to think of him like crows pick up shiny things. You know, I like to think of it as like Bigfoot has seen it, knows what a belt is, finds it in the woods, picks it up, puts it on. Now he's got a belt and belt buckle. He's got a flex on his Bigfoot buddies. That's what I like to believe. Whether or not that's what went down, I don't know. But that story alone is something I'm like, bro, that's cool. To see something like that is really, really cool. Now, also, Seeley Lake has a bunch of wild stuff. A lot of sightings that go on around this whole thing, too. Reported sightings all around there. One of them came from 1961. There was a magazine called Saga Magazine. But anyway, this story came from 1961, told by Roy Rye. And he describes an experience he has. He's hunting, right? He's bear hunting in Mission Mountains around Seeley Lake. No big deal. Like I said, of course, we have to think back to hunting was, it's big now, but it was a lot more socially open. Like a lot more people just was like, it's just what people did. Rye says that this took place in December of 1959, that he was following a set of tracks in the snow. He cut tracks, found them, started following this trail. Says that when he gets to it, he crosses this opening. And when he gets into this area, he starts having this really odd feeling, right? Like we've discussed, this very strange, unsettling feeling of being noticed. So what he says, he looked around to his left and then to his right, and there it was. It's 20 yards away. Looking straight at him was this thing. Its head and arms were resting on a fallen tree that was 5 or 6 foot above the ground. Seeing only the head and the arms, Rye thought, hey, large bear. Not just a large bear, he thought very large bear. So he starts to shoulder his rifle, okay? This thing starts looking at him, leaning on this tree, and says, Rye reports that it grinned at him. Yeah, that it says this thing let go an eerie half-human scream, and then it starts kind of slowly shaking its head side to side, and Rye could hear what he said was like a rumbling sound. So right then I'm like, is that the infrasound, right? Is it growling? Or is this a report of a possible interaction with infrasound before we even knew what it was? Either way, Raz got the rifle ready. He starts backing up. He said this thing moved like the minute Raz could see. Boom. As he starts backing up, this thing moves out. He could see from the waist up, flat-headed, stubby-eared, short neck, big sloping shoulders, super long arms, covered in brownish gray hair. And he sees this thing move out. Right? That's it. Steps out there, ready to rip. So it turns out, people want to find out a little bit more about this, so the Billings Gazette looks into it, and they found out that Rye was a licensed big game hunter and had killed, over the seasons, tons of bear, guided a lot of people on bear hunts, like really great big trophy bear hunts. This guy knew what a bear looked like. And that's what they're like, bro, you know that wasn't a bear, right? So then that gets going even more. So there was an outdoors magazine. They wrote Rye and they actually talked to him. And he told the magazine that what he had seen was not a bear. He said this thing looked more like a huge ape. He said at the time he was armed with a 270. That was his rifle. It was a 270 and he was carrying a 357. That's what he was carrying at the whole thing. Well armed. Knew what to do, been in the, that's what he did for a living, was a professional hunter, and he ran, right? He booked it. He backed out of there and he ran. And I'm down with the run and the whole thing. You come across something like that, you don't know. Like, that was always the joke. What if? What if it wasn't going to do anything and you touch that thing up? Now, 270's got some pop. I ain't going to lie. 270's got some thump, right? But still, what if that ain't enough? What if you just wing it? And he wasn't going to do anything to you, but now he is. Now, because of that, he's going to try to pull your arms off because you went and did something stupid, panicked, and pulled the trigger. Just run. Just run. And that was the best move, right? There was another one there. A fella named Reed Christensen, back in November of 62. He said that he witnessed a large bipedal creature. This is in and around this area, running up a large embankment. And that his wife and daughter were near the top of Lost Trail Pass in Ravalli County, and they spotted something like this too. And they all report this, between 6 and 7 foot tall, long arms, no neck. So, pretty much sounds again like something else that we've been told multiple times of how they basically find them. Our homie, Albert Rosales, had an account from 1964, took place August 11th. There was a logger up in the area named Lou Smalley. Now, Lou reports something that's even crazier. A 5 foot tall, shaggy creature. Real shaggy. Like, if it's enough to be reported as shaggy, imagine what that must look like. So I'm picturing a Bigfoot, but a 5 footer, a juvenile, an early teen, right? We're talking early teen, doesn't comb its hair. Room stinks, doesn't change its socks. That's what we're talking about right here. This thing was standing on a pile of rocks on a point near Gerd's Creek near Hamilton. Said it was evening time. Smalley's driving a logging truck and he spots this thing. And instead of stopping and looking, he just drives on because he's a smart fella, right? Like, I'm not messing with that whole thing. I'm feeling a little off. Yeah, one of those deals. So, there was this thing, a shaggy Bigfoot, still in this whole deal. But I'm not surprised. The more you read and the more you look into this, you can't be surprised when you look at this area. This area is like, bingo. Just like anything in the Pacific Northwest, bingo. You're like, yeah, Bigfoot lives here. It's beautiful. It's rough. Also, too, let's not forget, there's not a lot of people. I think Montana's third in the list of, I think it's Alaska, Texas, and Montana for the amount of land. Is that what it is? And then I believe that it is third Alaska, Wyoming, and Montana in population, the lowest population per size. So why not live in those areas? If you want to go to a place that's beautiful, that's rugged, that's remote, and has a fewer number of people in it, this is where you go. This is the place that you go check it out. I'm going to leave you with this right here. In 1969, Ted Foster decided, I'm going to cut some lodge poles east of Lost Trail Pass. I'm going to go out there and get it done. And while I'm out there, well, old Ted gets this feeling. He gets this feeling that something's behind him, something's looking around, right? So he shuts down his saw. Nothing. Turns around, and he sees this large creature, and it's not that far away. And what Ted describes is a 7-foot-tall, 300-pound ape man covered in black hair. Now, he's panicked at this point, going to defend himself. So he busts off the saw. Now, I'm thinking, which one is it? Right? Is it a steel? Husqvarna? What are we talking about? What are they packing around? One pull, boom, saw busts off. Creature doesn't move. But Ted reports that he witnesses the hair on the creature, on the like the back of its neck. And I'm picturing down its ridge of its back, stand up. I don't remember ever hearing this, but he hears or sees it, doesn't hear it. Boy, if you could hear hair stand, run, use the saw on yourself. He sees the hair stand up down its back. At this moment, it's kind of like, you know, watching the dog pin its ears back, anything like that, right? At this moment, he kills the saw, shuts the saw down. When the saw shuts off, the hair settles back down. Said at this moment, Ted's locked eyes with this thing. This thing is still looking at it. Never turns its eyes away from Ted, just slowly starts walking away, inching away. Ted said this was at 3 p.m, broad daylight, and this thing moved beautifully. He said it was so graceful. He said every movement this thing made was like it was just cruising through life. So, folks, there are a few of the strange stories I found in Montana. I got piles more. We'll have to do some more ASAP. Let's take a quick break. We'll peel open Fizzy Skull, see what he thinks, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. That's scratching the surface. A little bit of giants, a lot of crazy Bigfoot. We're just getting into it. Montana has got some really, really interesting Bigfoot encounters.
It does. And it's because it's so vast. And,
yeah.
You know, the national parks and things that are up there, the Teton Mountains, it's a beautiful place. And it makes only sense that stuff would come over from British Columbia, Washington, and migrate through into Montana. You know, it just makes sense. For whatever reason, now I'm not saying, I know this is crazy because we're all speculating on a speculative creature, but there are certain places where I'm like, yeah, that makes sense that it would be there.
Same.
Where there's other times I'm like, there's a Bigfoot in Connecticut. No, that doesn't seem right to me. Or, you know, it just, well, for whatever reason, I'm not saying you couldn't, but it just in your mind, it doesn't seem right. Right.
Like when I see peanut butter and jelly. Right. It just feels when you say it, it's the same thing. Like I've always, you start getting up around the Pacific Northwest or anything up in the Northwest and then all along the Rockies and making your way up through the mountain ranges, that feels right. Even parts of Oklahoma. But when you, like you said, when you start talking about Bigfoot in wide open areas, it doesn't feel, and I'm not saying they're not there, not discounting or discrediting any of the sightings. It just feels off. But like we always laugh about it. Sure looks squatchy around here.
Yeah, no, it,
right? It does. Right.
I remember when we were flying up to Edmonton. No, it was Alberta. We were flying to Calgary, and we had to fly over a lot of the Pacific Northwest to get up there. I remember looking out the window and, like, telling my brother, like, look, man, there's got to be some Sasquatch down there. I don't see nothing but trees for hundreds of miles. You know what I mean? I know there's roads and logging roads and things, but it just seems like a perfect place for them to hide. Where, like you said, if I hear about a Bigfoot living in the desert, the thing's 8 foot tall and look 380 pounds, you're like, what could it eat?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's mountain lions that live in the desert too, and those are big animals.
Yeah, yeah.
It just, maybe they cover a large area.
It just, some places, and maybe it's us looking, wanting to see it, or it, when it makes more sense, does it mean that you're basically, you're more easily fooled maybe going into it? Or
yeah.
I don't know. But when we talk about these areas, it's just, they're also romantic to me. Those states and that area and all that stuff with the history, it's kind of a romantic area. The idea of mountain men and all this stuff roughing it through there before the settlers made it in. It just makes sense.
I want to go up there and do some fly fishing.
I'm down. Let's go.
Your buddy Rob lives up there, doesn't mm-hmm. he?
In Idaho? He lives in Idaho. Yeah.
Yeah. It's right next there.
Yeah.
Next to it. In fact, I was just speaking with Dr. Stepich, and he's been going at it with this biologist around here because the biologist says there's no mountain lions around here. And David,
That fella's incorrect.
Well, that's what I was telling him about our neighbor to where we and you hunt said that he saw one on a game camera or whatever. And Dr. Stepich was like, yeah, that's what I've seen them around too. And, you know, and the guy says, I don't know, there's some kind of beef going back and forth with them.
That's funny.
And I was like, well, I don't know if Cam can get the image or not, but
I don't know.
Contact him and you might have to send it to him. But yeah.
So there's none in Parker County.
None of them around here. And I'm just like, that's ridiculous to say that because I've seen tracks in my lifetime in Parker County.
That is kind of ridiculous. Look, the Brazos River cuts through here. That's all you got to say, man.
I don't know the biologist, but I'd like to wonder, why does he think that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. But it's just like that. There could be a large animal. You may never see one. Doesn't mean that it's not there. Same thing with Sasquatch.
Yeah.
Ring-tailed cats. They live in Texas. I've never seen one.
And I used to see them all the time as kids. We talk about it. It's been probably 20 years since I've seen one now. Maybe longer.
Yeah.
Listen to this. Speaking of seeing cats in the wild. Okay.
Okay.
Says I was working at a security detention center in a place we call Whippia up here. It's absolute vast land there with wood stretching for miles and miles. It's about 3 a.m. in the morning when the encounter occurred. There were four security posts around the fence line, which we had to man and make sure the detainees didn't escape. I was stationed at Zulu 3 post, which was situated behind the detention center, where those seven Lebanese detainees escaped 3 months before I started working there. It was 3 a.m. and I was sitting at my post watching a kookaburra bird swoop down from the top of the tall fence to the grass, collecting bugs and lizards and etc. when I heard a crash in the woods behind my post. This caused all the occupying kookaburra birds to wake up and call. There were thousands of them up there in northern Queensland. I quickly got up and ran to see what the commotion was all about. This is when I saw what the birds were calling to. It was a cat humanoid being standing about 2 meters behind my post. It was making its way through the trees until it saw me standing there watching it. It stooped and put both its hands up, which looked like long claws. Now, it stood about 8 to 9 feet tall. I was trying to see what it looked like through the darkness, but all I could see was feature-wise was the shape of this cat's face, like a tiger. And honestly, it looked ferocious, and it was built like it was made to do serious damage. Now, standing on 2 feet, it then walked backwards into the woods and vanished there into the darkness. I was so glad I had a 40-foot fence between me and it, honestly. And for the remainder of my time working there, I kept my back face towards the detention center and my front faced towards the woods. This encounter I'll definitely take to my grave.
A Leonin. A tabaxi, right?
Australia. Yeah, like an 8 to 9 foot tall tabaxi.
Now, what could that be? You know what I'm saying? It's like the lion people from what was Jason Stackhouse's family, the cat people.
Here's the only thing that I think
of, like,
the
Michael Jackson Thriller video. He looked more like a cat, right, than a werewolf.
Yes, a werecat. I like to think that this is some sort of like shaman or skinwalker routine or whatnot that the native Aborigines can pull.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Like something like that. Like they can kind of morph into
like
this.
The dream time. Yes. And then, yeah. Yeah.
And then you become like a giant puma man.
I hear like the didgeridoo in the background.
Oh, yeah. If you've not seen Mystery Science Theater 3000 cover Puma Man, you're missing out.
I don't know if I've seen that episode.
Man, you're missing out. And check it out. I think it's on YouTube, but I know you can catch it on other stuff. Puma Man.
Yeah.
Also, the Beast of Boggy Creek 2 is really good when they cover that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's great.
I'd have to check that out, too.
So, Upright Cat Person.
I do want to go to the movies soon. Me and my wife want to see The Iron Claw about the Von Erichs.
Yep.
That comes out like in a week or so.
That's that Efron boy is in there, in it? Because I don't know who plays it.
I don't know who plays it, but the Von Erichs is like, I remember going to see them as a kid.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
So when the walls were made out of tin.
Yeah.
The old wrestling arena, when they had just like crappy insulation stuffed in there. Dude, it was great.
I think there's only one alive.
Fritz was the father, and it was Carrie, Kevin, and David. Wasn't that the three? Carrie was the oldest, wasn't it? And then Kevin and David, one of them.
I think there's only one.
One of them died on there. I think one of them took his own life. I think that was Carrie. One of them died in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't remember where the other one passed at. But yeah, they were big things here.
Yeah.
Like that's what's wild is, again, it's one of those things, just like I've tell this story often, is I did not realize as a young man how big Pantera was, right? I had no clue until Dimebag got killed. Because it always felt like to me that it was just a local Texas band. Like when you were a kid growing up, they were always there. It just kind of felt like it was, oh, yeah, we saw them in Fort Worth. That's the way this thing was. It wasn't until I got much older you realized, oh, no, they made an impact everywhere.
Yeah, they're an international.
Yeah, like, oh, gosh, I thought that was just ours.
Yeah, well, you know, that's like that with a lot of bands where, you know, some of them, they seem like they're small town bands, but they actually are much larger. You just don't know that because they're from your area. So you've always kind of been around them. Right.
You're at the same way. Watch the documentary. It feels like the same thing.
My wife and them just went and watched. They went to Dickies Arena and watched ZZ Top like 2 months ago.
Nice.
And it was them and Lynyrd Skynyrd and...
No, it wasn't Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Well, I know. I didn't know.
It was just some cover band of Lynyrd Skynyrd.
I'm not doing any more concerts. Right. But the Trans-Siberian was awesome.
Was so worth going to
check. Yeah, that was good. That would be good. It'd be good to take your kids to everything. It was really neat.
So you have any crazy plans coming up with any Christmas stuff? Are y'all going to be staying close when it gets any of that?
Yeah, we'll be close. We're going to a family's house in Acton, so
not very far
from me. It'd be good.
So. Well, I have got graduation coming up. Got to bring the daughter back.
Finally
finished.
Get to
do all of that. Finally finished. Coming up soon. She'll be finally finished.
Yeah, much like their football program. Looks like that's totally imploded.
Oh.
So all these players left. The coach is gone. Tough times over there in College Station.
Tough times. Hey, look, the Aggs will come back. They'll dig their way back out of it. Time to be a basketball fan now. Or wrestling.
Yeah, I was like, let's not get too crazy.
Or hockey.
Well, before we get out of here, folks, if you want to send some stories to me and Cam that we can read for the listeners, please do not hesitate. You can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the hotline, 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD. Let's not forget about our wonderful sponsors.
Folks, if you want to get on the health train like me and Mr. Filson have got on, and you want to make that your New Year's resolution, it's real simple. Just go to drinkag1.com/expanded, right? Just run over there to drinkag1.com/expanded. That's where you're going to be able to take control of your health right there.
That's right. And if you want to join Fume in accelerating humanity's breakup from destructive habits, you need to grab yourself the Journey Pack today. Visit tryfume.com and use the code EXPANDED to save 10% when you place your order. And that's about all the time we have for this episode. Cam, what do you got planned for your next week?
Just, like I said, a little bit with the graduation. And then I'm not really sure. I guess prepping. We have a family Christmas coming up in about a week where we like to do it before all the big stuff when we get together with my wife's family. So that's kind of what we're looking forward to now, getting to watch all the littles run around and play and go crazy. So it'll be a good time.
Right on. I just got more work and I've almost got all my Christmas shopping wrapped up. So I'm ahead of the game this year. I'm getting excited.
Nice.
Getting ready to be making some Christmas candy, stuff like that.
Word.
Looking forward to that.
Bags of that.
I hope everybody has a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.